You're listening to Season 2 of the Grief Sense Podcast. I'm your host, Mimi Gonzalez, aka the Zillennial Griever. I am a creative, entrepreneur, social impact strategist, and community organizer based in Hartford, Connecticut. But most importantly, I am a griever. Grief Sense is really a safe space for creatives who are grievers. And I really created this space because it's something I wish I had. And sometimes you have to create the things that you wish existed. I am a serial griever where I've experienced significant loss, losing about 20 people before I turned 25 years old. And it was really hard to find community, people who looked like me in the death positive movement space. On the show, you'll mainly hear from Gen Z and millennial minoritized grievers, but you also have some advocates on the show who share our experience, but also want to amplify our voices and our stories. So what is Grief Sense? What does that even mean, right? It's not just some fancy name of a brand or the podcast, okay? It's actually a term that I've coined to name my experience. Sometimes the words that exist in our vernacular aren't really representative of our lived experience. And so thus Grief Sense was born. So Grief Sense to me really is an inner sixth sense and intuition that's unlocked after experiencing physical loss. And it inspires purpose through creative expression, hence grievers who are creatives. So we do this in three ways. One, we embrace our mantra, which is we live life as a privilege. Two, we honor our ancestors and the legacies of our loved ones who have died. And three, we not only normalize talking about grief and death and everything in between, but we really talk about the importance of planning for our death and talking about this in community with our families. What are our death care wishes? You know, and really normalizing that, because that is not something that we typically do in our very death phobic world. I hope that when you tune into these episodes that you feel super comfortable. I want you to think that you are in a living room, or in Spanish we say the sala, but the grief sala. And I hope that you're able to have tea in your hand or a cafecito, so that way you're comfortable. I want you to feel like you're talking to your best friends or your primos or your cousins, people who really understand you and get it. And if you are not a griever, and if you are here to learn and listen to the stories that are shared on the show, thank you so much for being here. Your voice is important too, because guess what? If you're not a griever now, unfortunately, you will be one day. And I'm hoping that the insights that you hear on the show will help you navigate that experience. One thing I wanted to also share, y'all, Grief Sense is always going to be lowercase, because death, grief, all of that, it can be really scary. So these conversations is to really destigmatize death and grief, and really making sure it's like relatable, digestible, accessible. And yeah, it can be scary for sure, but let's do it together. Let's be in community together. So with that, welcome to the movement. Welcome to La Familia, and welcome to Grief Sense. Let's dive in. Welcome back, listeners of Grief Sense. I am so happy to kick off season 2 with Pierce Freelon. He is my guest today, and I can't wait for you all to listen to his story. First, I want to say, if you haven't already rated the podcast Grief Sense, that would be greatly appreciated. We want to make sure we are able to reach as many young grievers as possible. And I think that this episode will also help you do that as well. So again, I have Pierce Freelon with me today, y'all, and I can't wait for y'all to listen to everything he has to share. First, I just want to say how I found Pierce. And, you know, it's a typical day in Grief Sense world. I'm scrolling on by on Instagram, and I see this podcast clip of Pierce with PBS, and he is talking about grief, and he is describing grief as love. And it really resonated deeply with me. And y'all, I made my cells vibrate, and I was like, ooh, this person needs to be on Grief Sense. If he'll entertain and indulge the idea, I gotta shoot my shot. I just gotta ask. And here we are. So clearly that went well, and we have him on the show, and I'm just so grateful for you all to meet him. So Pierce, feel free to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. Yeah, well, you did a wonderful job introducing me. There's a lot I could say, but I'm going to introduce myself through some ancestors that I hold very near to me. I'm in my office right now, and one of my spiritual mentors, Black woman, feminist, creative, healer in the Yoruba tradition. Her name is Omi Sade Bernie Scott. She has a great podcast about menopause, which you should check out, Black Girl's Guide to Menopause. She told me that when I'm smudging a room, you need to go to all the corners of the room. And whenever I burn Palo Santo or sage in my office, I go to each corner. And in the first corner I go to, I acknowledge and thank my aunt, my auntie Debbie, who passed away from cancer 3 years ago. She was a knitter, and there's a bust of a kind of a mannequin that I took from her house that is in this corner. In the corner to my left are two ancestors. One is my father, Phil Freelon, whose picture you can see right there just above me. His altar is behind me.
Hey, Phil.
And, hey, Dad. And also another Black woman scholar, mentor, Dr. Michelle Mugo. She was the chair of the African American Studies Department at Syracuse. So they share a corner over here. Then there's Dr. Hall's corner. He was my AFAM professor at UNC in undergrad, a very beloved mentor whose son makes beats that I, you know, is one of my best friends. That is Dr. Hall's corner. And then there's a gigantic Afro-pick fist, probably 6 feet tall in this corner. That was made for a puppet show I did at the Kennedy Center. My grandmother, Queen Mother Frances Pierce, did hair. And so I associate this corner with her presence, energy, wisdom, and love. So I am Auntie Debbie's nephew. I am Phil's son. I am Dr. Mugo's son. I am Dr. Hall's son. And I am Granny Franny's grandson. These are the ancestors that I keep close to me, some of them, and sometimes their positions switch, but today that is their orientation. I'm surrounded by love, by care, by wisdom and protection here in my office. And so that is how I will introduce myself today.
Love that. And if that doesn't set the tone for Grief Sense, I really don't know what that does.
Right.
Thank you so much for that, and also normalizing these practices. Like, you can tell it's so evident in your, just your daily practice in honoring your ancestors. And right before I record every episode, I have my same ritual.
Beautiful.
I love the corners, though. I need to integrate that now and put in different corners of my house. Right now I have kind of like an altar shrine with multiple pictures of my loved ones, and yeah, inspiring me. I love that. That was beautiful.
Well, are you based in New York?
I'm in Hartford, Connecticut, actually.
Connecticut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not too far from New York, though.
Okay. Well, there was the other place where I've heard like four corners, it's actually in the context of North, South, East, and West, is there is a healing collective of Black femmes and women called Harriet's Apothecary. Right. Apothecary. Harriet's
Love
Apothecary.
It. Got it.
And I first encountered this collective at the Allied Media Conference in Detroit, and they were holding space. They were holding space for some kind of radical healing from a Black feminist perspective. And they
Love.
Did a lot around identifying how different energy is associated with different directions. And, you know, I'm not like deep into the what. I was just there and present for the blessing. That was very much a part of being in their presence. When Omi told me about the corners, that resonated with me, because there's these four directions and the four corners. And so anyway, I just thought that was something that folks can check out, especially if they're based in New York.
Absolutely. And I really feel like that also sets the tone for the year, right? We're in a new year. We should really welcome our new year and our dreams, our hopes, our aspirations in memory, in honor of our ancestors. So that is just beautiful. Thank you so much for that, seriously. And thank you for being here. I am just so excited to experience your energy and your presence and spend quality time with you in this moment. You know, this concept of time actually has been super top of mind for me, because to really think about how we spend our time doing the things that we are doing and how others spend their time, right? Like everyone spends their time differently. And I just really admire all of the work, all of the things that you're doing. And you can really tell how community driven you are, how, you know, family oriented, how, you know, you really care about inspiring the next generation. And if all of those things, also with creative expression and music and all of the different things, for someone to spend their time like that is really inspiring. And I think so many people can learn so much from you and how they can be spending their time. So that is just what I'm calling into our time right now. But that's just been, yeah, top of mind for me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. And, you know, I don't see anything. Well, I'm not going to say it's not special, but anything unusual about my time. And this might be a message for your listeners out there. I know that you, Mimi, recently, you know, stepped away from a corporate job to step into a space that's more passion oriented. And I want to applaud you for that.
Thank
I want to speak life into and affirm some of the goals and ambitions that you have for Grief Sense. And, you know, I think when you're in divine alignment with your purpose, which I think is the birthright of every person and something that grief really pointed me ever more directly towards being in alignment with my purpose, then what is time? Well, I think that at that point, we become like seeds. And when you look at what a seed does and you say, oh, wow, you grew roots and you popped out the ground and you're bearing fruit. It's like that's miraculous in a way, but it's also what a seed does when it's planted in fertile soil. It's the most natural thing that a person or a being can do when they're being nurtured in the right environment. So yes, I received the affirmation. I appreciate your recognition of my time as well spent. And I reflect back to you that this is the natural growth that comes with being in alignment with purpose. And I can see that you are also on a similar journey. And I know that, you know, more fruit and more abundance and creativity and wonder and connection is a part of your future, just as I know when I put a cucumber seed in my garden out back that, you know, with proper light and fertile soil, that it's going to be productive.
Thank you. I gladly receive that as well, you know, and it's so funny that you talked about this concept of, you know, just the environment and fertile soil, right? Because literally I described myself when I was leaving the corporate environment. I was just like, y'all, it's not me, it's you. Like, I know I'm a beautiful flower, but I'm in a pot with toxic soil. As soon as I remove myself from this toxic soil, I know I'm going to flourish. And that's exactly what's starting to happen, right? Like, I don't have all of the things that I want or desire yet, but that's also the beauty of it. It's like enjoying the journey that you're on and just loving yourself through all of the phases and stages. And I feel like this past year leading up to where we are now really affirmed to myself what it means to be devoted to myself.
Yes.
And just this word of devotion. I really feel like that's my word for this year's devotion. It's like, do people really know what devotion means? And I feel like a lot of people think of devotion when it comes to religious practices and spirituality, and that's definitely valid and true. And I also feel like in terms of relationships, right, we shouldn't only be devoted to our partners or our children or our friends. What about being devoted to ourselves? Like, are we being unfaithful to ourselves and our dreams because we're so caught up with nurturing everyone else and neglecting us in the process? And so literally just leaving such a toxic environment created space for that fertile soil to become fertile, for me to learn these lessons, for me to be devoted. And like, I feel like only when you're in that mindset,
or in that space of devotion and everything that comes with that, because it looks different for everyone. But only when you're in that space can you even begin to understand what you have while you have it, and just really taking things as they come and not wanting more, which is okay to always want more abundance. We welcome all the abundance. We welcome all the abundance. But it's really appreciating what you have as well in the process and continuing to let that nurture this devotion in whatever way that looks like. So, yeah.
No, thank you. I'm loving the cipher.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Pierce, every episode we begin with, you know, who we're honoring today. And I love that that's how you kicked us off. So thank you so much for that. And with everyone that you did choose to honor and welcome into our space, would you be comfortable sharing your grief story with anyone you've honored, any specific person, whatever's top of mind for you? I'd love for you to kind of dive deep into your grief story and really, and the reason why I ask this question is I feel that when you understand our connections to grief, I feel like it provides more clarity and context as to how we spend our time and why we do so. And so I was just really intrigued by your story, and I think our listeners will be too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start with since he's here, clearly.
Right there.
That's my dad. Matter of fact, let me bring him in for a close up. This handsome fellow here. There he is.
Phil. Nice to meet you.
Phil Freelon. Yeah, he, special guy. He passed away from ALS in 2019.
Wow.
And, you know, it was interesting. Like, I mentioned that he helped me get even more close to what my purpose is. Helped me realize and kind of strip away things that were not necessary, as important, relevant to my personal and professional growth and development. And it kind of happened, you know, it's funny, I'm going to use the word accident now, but, you know, things like synchronicities and coincidences, you know, they happened a lot during his transition. And in my family, we've developed a term for that. It's called lasagna. lasagna is basically, yeah, it's basically like a stand-in for a coincidence or a synchronicity or like a what are the chances kind of moment. And the reason we call it lasagna is because a couple days before my dad passed away, he had stopped eating, and he kind of told us one day, like, you know, man, I'm hungry. And we're like, oh, what do you want? You know, we'll get you whatever you want. He's like, oh, man, I could really go for some lasagna. And we were like, okay, like, just lasagna, like, of all things? He's like, yeah, man, I could really use some lasagna. And he was kind of, you know, he was close to death. So he was, you know, a little loopy, a little sleepy. And we were all just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. So we're chilling. And this is my siblings and my mom, our family are there. We're kind of caring for him. He's in hospice. This is close to the end, and we all know it. And so then all of a sudden, within an hour of him saying that, the doorbell rings. And we're like, who's here? Like, well, no, we're all here. Nobody went to make a run or anything. We went upstairs, opened the front door. This is at my parents' house that my dad designed. He was an architect. And there was a lasagna sitting on the porch. So we were thinking to ourselves, all right, who did it? Which one of y'all snuck out and grabbed the lasagna? And no one had left the house. My dad was not on a mobile device at that point. It just showed up on our doorstep. So it took some, like, we were like, wait a minute, this is weird. Is somebody like pranking us? And so what happened was, we had this meal train thing, which is, you know, like a thing that people do, you know, you break your leg and you can't cook for yourself. So people can sign up to deliver food to your house. And this lady who was a professor at North Carolina Central on her own, you know, because it takes lasagna, it takes a minute to cook. She had been preparing it for hours before my dad said anything. There's no way she could have known. She was not in the room, you know, and and it just so happened that she had prepared this particular meal. There was no correspondence about what my dad liked to eat or what we wanted to eat. It was just there on the doorstep within minutes of him saying that that's what he wanted. And it was, and Mimi, when I tell you that this was a common occurrence, I am not exaggerating. This was just one of those that was so like, come on, like, are you serious? For real? Like, this man manifested some lasagna to teleport to our front door.
He really did.
Listen, we smashed that lasagna. Just, we ate that thing. And, you know, and so now when in our family, when we encounter a coincidence, we say, oh, that's lasagna. You know, it happens.
I love that.
Yeah. So, this is just one example, and I could give you others of the ways in which something supernatural, something divine, something cosmic is afoot. The transition of a life of a brilliant man is coming to an end in its physical form. He is on the verge of transition into a new state of being, and magic is happening everywhere. That was my experience with his death. And one of the things, this is how it ties back to my, a minute.
I felt maybe that in listeners, my soul.
Take a minute, yes, drink some
take
water.
Take that in, like.
That's it. Let's take a deep breath together. That might be a nice way to.
Let's breathe in for four. Hold for four. Exhale. Definitely have to hold space for that. That was. I felt that in my soul.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
That.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, one of the other things, I'm kind of jumping around in the timeline here, but
that's okay.
You know, weeks before he passed, I was one of his primary caregivers. I have two siblings and my mom and his sister and nieces and nephews. We all took part in helping be death doulas, you know, during that last kind of stretch of his life in this realm. But you know, I was a busy guy prior to my dad's diagnosis and traveled a lot and was teaching at the University of North Carolina and doing all types of stuff. I had a PBS web series. There was just like a lot going on. So when he got sick, all that stuff came to a halt. And so that I could be present for him. And I'm so grateful for that.
Wow.
That I had
what
the,
a gift.
Yo, it was the best gift in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I used to kick it over there sometimes for, you know, to give my mom a break. I would be there for 8 hours at a time, sometimes 12, sometimes a whole day. And, you know, it's kind of boring. Like after we're done checking in on what's going on, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours. He's taking naps. He's moving slow. Like I help him stretch. ALS is a disease where your body kind of gradually paralyzes. So he needed help with movement. And so that stuff was labor intensive and work intensive. But I would say 80% of my time there was just nothing, just sitting with nothing to do because I had cleared my calendar and, you know, not necessarily anything interesting or new to talk about with my dad. So there was a lot of time for a kind of a slow, gradual mourning, a slow grieving, a slow quiet. And in the space that created, I discovered a lot of music. I had been in a band called The Beast. We did like hip hop and jazz and it was great. We released a bunch of albums and toured and, you know, had a great thing going. But then I'm a dad, I'm a father of two, and I used to write songs about my kids all the time. Like, we would be in the car, I'd be like, hey, click your seatbelt, clickety-click, clickety-click. I would take out my phone, and I would like be like, oh, that's a jam, like clickety-click. Like, you know, yes. I'd take out my phone, I'd leave a voice note, I'd put it in my pocket, right? And I never really went back to listen to what I did until I was kind of stuck in my dad's house for multiple hours. And I'm looking through my phone to show him pictures of like, oh, remember, this is Halloween of 2018. Here's Justice's birthday. Here's, you know, Stella's recital. Like, we're going through my phone and I'm like, oh, look at these videos where I'm beatboxing something to the kids. Look at these voice notes that I've recorded going back to 2012, 2011, 2010, when they were little babies. And I was like, wow, so what I did, Mimi, over multiple days, every time I went over there when I had some downtime, I started to categorize and organize this raw data. Every time I had a voice memo that was, and I listened to them all because I had the time to do it, I put it in a folder. And when I looked at that folder, this is well before he passed, maybe 6 months before he passed, I had like 300 songs.
Wow.
And I was like, and in my mind, I was like, oh, this is just a thing that I do sometimes. No, this was like a decade of fatherhood.
Wow.
You know, different scenarios. We're in the bubble bath. I'm telling them to brush their teeth. We're in the car. I'm driving them to school. Like all different types of scenarios. I would pull my phone out and record these little songlets. And so what I discovered in that kind of time period caring for my dad is like, wow, I have like a lot of hot little songs about kids. Maybe I should do a children's music album. And and I started working on that album. And the album was about fatherhood, and it was two-tier. A lot of the songs were inspired by my children and being a dad, but then it was also during this period in which my dad was dying, and I was reflecting on fathership, you know?
Wow.
Like, you know, you have relationships, it's like fathership.
Right.
There's a job here that for my dad is ending, you know, or at least part of the job is ending. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting, Mimi, I this is so fascinating to me, an interesting reversal, right? Because my dad is now needs to be fed. My dad needs to be cared for. My dad needs to be tended to in the same way that a father typically tends to his child. But now the child is providing these things for the father. So that was really interesting to me. And I just started making these children's songs. And my dad passed away in 2019, and I released my children's music album in 2020. And when I tell you I had 300 songs, that is not an exaggeration. I picked 10 of them joints and just put it on an album. And it was huge. It was on NPR. There was like, I got a book deal. This book, Daddy Daughter Day, was somebody who heard my story on NPR and was like, you need to write a book about this. I got a 2-book deal. This is my other book.
Look at that one.
Yeah. You know, about fatherhood.
Was this the Black to the Future one?
Black album, to the Future was my second children's album.
One. Okay.
That was a same collection of songs, right? Because it came from the 300 plus, you know, a few here and there. You know, all these songs that I discovered while caring for my dad. That album was nominated for a Grammy. Then Ancestars, which is also nominated for a Grammy. Like,
right.
This whole dramatic career trajectory shift from making music for adults, like in the vein of like The Roots or Talib Kweli, it was like kind of political hip hop. And I put that down to make children's music, and it goes hard. Like it bops for all,
It definitely does bop. I've been bopping to it all week. Literally from last week to this week, I've been bopping.
Wow.
Like that, I'm really processing all of that. And I'm just honored to be in your presence. And I am just so grateful for your father. And I think the word that is top of mind for me right now after you sharing that is just legacy. You know, like what a legacy that he's leaving behind, you know. And you are, when you were talking about like the role reversal, like I was picturing just like passing the baton, kind of like, this is my legacy. It's yours as well. And do with it what you may, and look how you're doing. And like, it's just really beautiful. And it's like his spirit, his legacy is literally living through you and your family members, but of course through the music now, and other people get to experience his energy and his legacy and don't even know it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
That's powerful.
That's the beautiful thing about it. You know, when I wrote my first album was called DAD, and, you know, what I realized in creating this album is it was as much about being a son as it was about being a dad, because everything that I learned about being a goofy, loving, creative dad, this guy taught me.
This guy right here.
This guy right here. So it is, and that's part of his legacy. That's part of his legacy. He was an architect, so his legacy also includes buildings and structures that exist all over this country. The Civil Rights Museum in Greensboro, the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History in Baltimore, the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco, the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. These are buildings that came out of his mind. And me and my kids, you know, we can walk into these buildings and we can feel his presence. But this is another part of his legacy, is the way that he fathered and the way that he died is a part of his legacy. When I think about my own death journey, this man showed me the blueprint.
Literally. No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. I'm glad you caught that. I didn't, actually, but that is a great metaphor. He literally showed me the blueprint for how to die well. Wow. And oh my goodness. Like I want it exactly like he did, down to the manifesting meals, just by speaking
the lasagna.
Yeah. Like
wow.
What a gift. And
what a gift.
Yeah, I am grateful for that, because I think he had a wonderful, beautiful death. It was so sacred. It was so intimate. It was so another. You want to hear another lasagna moment?
I do.
I was right next to him when he passed. When he drew his last breath, my mom and sister were asleep in the corner. We had been doing shifts, staying up with him. We knew it could happen any minute. He was in his home, a house that he built, in his bed. I was holding his hand. And, you know, I'd been up for a couple hours, probably from 4 o'clock a.m. Was just kind of scrolling on my phone, you know, looking at Instagram, passing the time while everyone else in my family was asleep. And I heard him inhale and then nothing. I said, I looked up, Dad, nothing. And I put my ear on his chest. I didn't hear anything, sat back down. I looked at my phone. It was 7:02 in the morning. Now, 7:02 is the address of our childhood home, 702 Cobb Street.
Wow.
And I laughed. I was like, Dad, you're funny. Like, I went home at 7:02. Really? That's what we doing? Like, it was another one of these lasagna
moments.
He knew
what he was doing.
Listen.
Wow.
He waited. He waited until 7:02. I woke up my mom. You know, I didn't tell her about the 7:02 thing until probably a day later, because, you know, she was just in her own grief about his transition. But we talked about it later. I was like, you know, he passed at 7:02. And she was like, 7 o'clock in the morning? Oh, 7:02. Of course. It was like, this guy is out here playing cosmic gotcha.
Just like, it's the cosmic gotcha for me.
Come on.
Well, so have you experienced any lasagna moments after his transition that are in?
You want to hear one? I'll give you another one.
I do. I'm living for this right now.
Listen, it happens so damn often, it's not even funny. Here's another one about 702. So this summer, so first of all, my third album, which was nominated for a Grammy this year, is called Ancest Stars. It's an album with my mother. This summer, we did a puppet show with a puppet troupe called Paper Hand Puppet Intervention. The whole puppet show has puppets inspired by the songs on our album. So we're basically like scoring a 90-minute play with these giant puppets about death and grief and transition and life and transformation and healing. That's what the show is about. And so opening night, first of all, I'm like notoriously late to everything. You're lucky I showed up here on four minutes early.
That was great.
Yeah, I don't know what came over me, but all summer we're rehearsing this puppet show. I'm late. Listen, I'm not a diva or anything, but I believe that like Black people time, CPT is cultural. And, you know, I show up when I get there. And when I get there, I put in work. So what do you want from me? So anyway.
Period.
So fast forward to opening night. It's opening night. I know I have a reputation for being late. And I told the director, I was like, look, man, we're going to start right on time tonight. It's going to be awesome. So it's like, and the show starts at 7. So it's like 6:55. I'm ready because I'm introducing the show. I'm like, I'm ready to go out. And then at 7 o'clock, somebody grabs my shoulder. They says, don't go out yet. I was like, what is it? They're like, there's something wrong with the sound. The sound guy, like the band, there's something up with the band. And I was like, oh God. And I was like, where's the director? I need to find him. His name's Donovan. I was like, where's Donovan? I want him to know that we're not late because of me. Like someone else is responsible for us being late. Cause I told him we're going to be on time today. So finally I'm standing there backstage and finally the person is like, okay, you can go on now. And I'm like, okay, well, how late are we? What time is it? And he's like, it's 7:02. I was like, okay, well.
All right, Daddy-O, I see you.
Okay, Dad. So I went out there and introduced the show and the whole time I was just like, he just had to say something. Like, you just had to say something. He just had to mess up some little sound thing so that I could step out at 7:02. And, you know, afterwards, of course, nobody knows this except my mom. But I explained to the director afterwards. I was like, first of all, I want you to know we were not late because of me. It was someone else's fault. Secondly, let me tell you when we started and why we started then. the celestial reason why. My dad prevented the show from starting so that we could start at 7:02. And from that day forward, we never started the show until 7:02. And we did 27 shows. It was wild.
Wow.
It was a long summer. But yeah, that's just...
Wow, that's so beautiful.
I could tell you 50-11 more stories of cosmic synchronicity, coincidence, what my friend Jesse Huddleston calls divine providence. Where it's just like, yo, what are the chances? This is wild.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's so normal now, like the magic of it. It's not that I appreciate it, but it doesn't surprise me anymore. It's the standard.
Right. It's normal. Yeah.
It's normal. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I always say, okay, hey Dad, or hey Granny Franny, hey Dr. Mugo, hey Auntie Debbie, what you want?
Right.
You know, like,
what's the message coming through today? Like, what's
the message? Because yes. You got my attention. So what's the message? Just come on, give it to me. Come on, give it to me. Yeah. So anyway,
it's so interesting because, you know, and I was talking to you a little bit about Grief Sense before we started recording, and like, it's a very multi-layered definition, and it's like a living, breathing definition of Grief Sense, because I feel like a lot of that is in order to even pick up on these synchronicities, you have to be in a state of receiving and to understand that is a thing, right? Because there's a lot of people who, you know, different beliefs, different, and that's completely fine, right? Who won't even have or be in this state of reception for gifts like this, because A, they may be totally closed off to it. B, they may just not know, right?
Yeah.
And to be in that state of reception, I honestly think that's Grief Sense. And to be able to pick up on those things, it's really beautiful. And it's a gift that I wish a lot of more people let themselves be in that state, because we're conditioned to reject the things that we don't understand.
Right.
When were we ever going to conceptualize or understanding our parents leaving us or people that we really deeply care about dying? But guess what? That's part of a natural part of the human experience. Unless you experience loss of that direct impact, I truly feel that you wouldn't be locked into this side of consciousness. And so sometimes I think about, like, you know, sometimes we hear different podcasts or different, you know, people talking about it in the media and in science that we don't use the majority of the capacity of our brains. So I would be particularly interested in looking at the brains of people who are grievers, and especially people who have experienced a lot of loss, because I really do think that we're tapped in to a part of our brains that other people are not. And like, there are things that we simply cannot explain, but they're happening. Yeah. And I think that's grief sense, seriously. So,
yeah, you know, what's interesting, I would also be curious to have a neuroscientist plug some grievers up and see what's going on, right?
Yeah.
Because it's different. And I think that there's something about grief that silences nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. It's like part of what, even prior to my dad's transition, ALS is a diagnosis. It took a couple years for him to die from, but every day we were grieving from the inevitable kind of slowly approaching death march. And there was a lot of noise in my life. There was a lot of trips and traveling and work and grading papers and writing scripts and songs and concerts. And those are all, a lot of those things are great. And I thought were not just designed for my purpose, but appropriate for me at that time, right? Mm. Because those skills that I learned doing those things helped me, once I found what my true purpose was, be prepared to step into the work that I've been called to do. Mm. But the other thing is, like, there's not a lot of room for nonsense when grief takes up so much space in your mind. And so it quiets and silences the distractions in such a way that open you up to receiving. Mm. And I don't know necessarily that grief needs to be the catalyst for that type of awareness or awakening. In fact, I think that, you know, in our culture in particular, there's a lot of distractions and a lot of noise and social media and television and consumerism and capitalism. It's just full of blah, blah, blah constantly. Right. And perhaps our ancestors, who had less information coming in, may have had more of an opportunity to be connected in a way that is difficult to do in this day and age. But I'll tell you another part of my dad's legacy that is in alignment with that. So this is a book I wrote about my dad. It's called Daddy and Me Side by Side. It's about going camping with my son.
Everyone, go buy it.
Go buy it. So this is one of the things. I put this in both of my books.
Wow.
This says, resting beneath the same magnolia tree as we sit still, listen, and breathe. Just like the breathing we just did, right? My dad would take me out in the woods, and he would say, close your eyes, you know, open your heart, and listen. And we would just sit there and listen. Mm. And at first it's like, oh, wow. I hear running water, I hear trees, I hear the breeze, I hear birds, you know, and it's just a moment to stop and to pause and to be present. Right. Mm. And that was a technology. He was drilling that into my head from a very young age. He learned this from his grandfather. I've taught this to my son and my daughter. And those are the states in which you are able, most able, when the antenna is wide enough to be receptive. And the more you train, and the, you know, every time you take a moment to and space for yourself to be present in that way, it's almost like you're cleaning the dish, you know, of your satellite. Mm. Having done that meditation that morning puts you in a position to receive that message that evening or that later that week or whatever. And what grieving sometimes does is it gives you it's like a storm that washes all the debris out of your satellite in a way that is cleansing and really hones your signal, because there's not much more that you can listen to and deal with when you're dealing with the loss of a mighty loved one.
Right.
And, or a big feeling of any kind.
Right.
And so I think that's what the connection is. But you needn't go through like a hard situation to just daily be polishing your satellite. Yep. And that's the lesson since the death that I take as like, oh, I've stumbled onto access to this transmission, right? Mm-hmm. How do I maintain my relationship to it? How do I honor the contact that I have with the divine intelligence? And you do that through practice, or I do that, let me say, through practices that nurture my capacity for presence.
Yes.
Including, to your point about grief sense, creative practice, ritual, smudging, sage burning, meditation, yoga, being quiet out in the woods and listening to the birds and the trees and the rivers and the, you know, and the crickets. Like those things heighten my senses in such a way that allow lasagna to be on my plate every night. You know,
that wordplay right there. Yes,
that's it. That's it. That's what I'm eating, and they're serving it. Those ancestors that
they
mentioned,
serving it up.
Dishes on dishes.
And to that point, if you are tapped into your purpose or just connected to really doing the things that you want to do, doing the things that will maximize your time here in this physical form, this vessel that we have is not always going to be alive. I mean, I do truly believe our spirit will continue on in whatever way. But with this vessel that we have this experience now. What are we going to do to maximize it? How are we going to spend our time? And I think the more present we are, the more, you know, these different practices that we can do to practice being present. I'm thinking about set point and tolerance. So like in set point, I'm really big into like manifesting. And we talk about, you know, if you have your set point now, right? And if you're continuing to be in this state of manifesting and abundance and really being mindful of the words that you choose when you call the things that you want into existence, you're only going to increase or improve and go to another set point. And then you're going to be able to build from there. It's the same thing when you're working out, like your tolerance, the things that you can handle, you're going to be at another set point. And that way, when you do experience a catastrophic event or something really big and monumental in your life, you have your set point, right? And you have your foundation that you're building. So it won't be completely thrown off because you've worked so hard to get to where you are today. But if you never start, imagine all of the things that you could be calling into existence and working on that you aren't, because you aren't doing the things that you need to do to be connected to your spiritual assignment, your purpose, your mission, whatever it is, or honoring our loved ones that have passed away, honoring the resilience of our ancestors that are no longer here. To everyone tuning in, you know, if this ain't a reminder to, you know, get locked in with your missions, it's time. It's time. And sometimes you don't have to look so far away. Sometimes you have to look into the legacies of your people, into what you want your legacy to be, right? And really like doing the research on your ancestors and really letting yourself, let your craft, even like if there's something that you have a craft, whatever that is, whether that's writing, it's creating content, music, art, whatever, let your craft be your compass, because nine times out of 10, you will be honoring not only yourself, but your family and your entire ancestral lineage. I'm a true believer of that.
Let's go. I love it. So, I love it.
Something I wanted to say, and I loved how you brought up the Daddy and Me book, The Magnolia Tree, because I saw that on the cover, the album cover of Ancestars, there was an altar and there were a whole bunch of magnolia flowers there. And I think what a lot of, if you're not familiar with this flower, it's very powerful in the sense of grief world and honoring our ancestors. Or let me take that back. On the album cover of Ancestors, there's marigolds on there. And just the color yellow is very symbolic of connecting with our ancestors after they transition. And I really wanted to bring that up here and talk about this album of Ancestors. Even just the word ancestors into Ancestors, I think everyone should refer to their ancestors that way. I most certainly will. What a beautiful album. And I can hear the different like cultural influences and things like that. I really loved Build an Altar. That song was so beautiful to me because it's doing what we're talking about now, right? Kind of democratizing access or just normalizing the practice of honoring people who have died and making that a very normal thing instead of grieving in isolation or like, oh no, we shouldn't talk about that and keeping it hush hush. It's like putting it out in the open that this is a very normal human experience that we're all going to lose someone that we love, and let's do it in a way that, you know, in creative expression with music, with community. And so I really just wanted to get your, you know, motivation behind the album, even, you know, when you were writing that song, just anything top of mind for you and talking about Ancestars and what you want people to take away from that.
Yeah, well, I think one way to be present, to the presence of your ancestors, an important way is through, and an ancient way of ancestral veneration is through altar building. And this is a practice that, you know, African cultures, indigenous cultures, East Asian, Southeast Asian, Indian cultures, there's a ton of people who do this. And, you know, growing up in the States, it's just not a part of the zeitgeist of the culture here. In fact, it can be even demonized as, you know, witchcraft or, you know, anti-Christian in this kind of Judeo-Christian hegemonic society that we live in. So for me, it's a very anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, like radical act to call upon your ancestors, to build altars, to celebrate them, and to ask for their guidance. That song, you know, you mentioned the flower, I can't pronounce it, Sampasucha is it's like the flower of the Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my brother from, who's featured on the song, mentions the name of the flower in the Spanish proper pronunciation. But they are marigolds. And, you know, Day of the Dead is a really interesting ritual that is a 3-day recognition of those we have lost. And, you know, there's different days with different focuses. The third day is about infant loss and losing young ones and children. There's just, you know, another one of these topics that is very taboo and very something people deal with in the shadows. And lo and behold, a lot of families have dealt with that issue, and they have a whole day, the third day, the Day of the Dead, specifically for losing children, because it is a nuanced type of grieving. There's a type of grieving that you expect to come from losing an elder, a parent, a grandparent. You know, using a young one is a particular or a peer for folks who may be young when they experience loss for the first time. Is a nuanced type of grieving and a shock in a way that you expect spring, summer, winter, fall, winter. It's like, and then spring comes again. You don't expect spring to be followed by winter. It is shocking. But then how do we deal with that as a people, as a human species? Well, we create art, right? We build ritual. We make masks, we, burn candles, we, pour water out. This is an African tradition called a libation. We put food out for our ancestors, give them something to eat. We remember them. We say their names, we tell stories about them, etc. These are, rituals that, are rooted in a ancient healing practice that we've been removed from. How does that show up in the U.S.? Halloween, right? you get a sliver of it. It's candy and costumes, but it's not the Dia de los Muertos, the Chicano and indigenous ancient traditions around ancestral veneration. That, or I mean, you got You got Mulan, the problem. What's your cat's name?
Mulan the Menace.
Mulan the Menace, right? But if you ever watch the movie Mulan, the Disney movie, it, you know, it begins mm-hmm. with a young girl who is in communion with her ancestors. They each got a statue. They got an incense holder.
That's why her name is
Mulan. Come on, let's go. Yep. So she knows yep. about it. But I think, speaking of Disney, you know, Coco is another really good movie that goes into deep and intimate detail around these rituals that are really powerful. But on an right. individual basis, my dad's altar is full of black superheroes. That's just the uniqueness of his altar. It has a photo of him, and it has some artifacts that really summon his energy into the space. These things are healing technologies. They are channeling tools. And they go way back. So
yeah, way back.
We have to reclaim that. We have to reclaim that because we've been removed from it. We've been brainwashed out of understanding the power of it. For me as a musician, music is my love language. It's my art form. It's my gift, my talent, my purpose is connected to my ability to write songs. So yeah. a song like Build an Altar is a song that celebrates this ancient African and indigenous tradition. A song like Little Mushroom is a song about celebrating transformation and growth that comes from death. Literally, as in the mycelium network.
I don't know if you could see my background, but I have mushrooms and flowers growing out of skull. So yeah.
Yo, listen, that how does the lyric go? It goes, hey, little mushroom growing on a tree that's fallen, that died in the forest. You turn a grave to a garden. And it's a kid's song. This is for children.
Yeah, exactly.
You turn a grave to a garden. Hey, little mushroom, even when death is tragic, you're like magic. You reabsorb life and keep balance. It's like, how do we make kids, expose kids to the beauty, and it is beautiful,
absolutely,
of life. The beauty of life. There are four seasons, and you wouldn't want winter to last forever. Those are bad years when winter stretches on forever. You don't want summer forever. You know, there's turnover. There is a way in which death sustains and produces new life. That's how and why we're all here. It's the most natural thing a human being can do. Mm-hmm. So how about we celebrate the reality of our existence instead of living in fear or in the dark, kind of cowering from something that's a little mysterious? Like, the mystery could be part of the beauty of it. You don't need to know everything. Like, Come on. How did the lasagna get there? I don't fucking know. It just showed up.
Just showed up.
just appreciate the blessing and pass me a fork. Like, that's the...
I'm ready to eat, right?
Come on. Like, wow. Yeah, so... Oh,
this is so beautiful. And, you know, I'm so grateful. I love how you talked about Dia de los Muertos, because I say Dia de los Muertos is every day for me. It's every day. It should be every day, right? Just how people talk about Valentine's. Valentine's Day should be every day. Mother's Day, Father's Day, that's every day, right? Mm-hmm. It's really appreciating life while you have it. And in doing so, how are you honoring your people? And so, and frequently I talk to, you know, my friends and peers about legacy projects and how... Literally, you are one walking legacy project, Pierce. Everything you have is just living, breathing legacy. But, you know, this podcast is a way for me to not only honor, you know, my purpose, at least what I think is my purpose, right? But also, you know, the legacies of guests that I have on the show. Yep. Also honoring, it's like, and I always said this in the beginning, my very first episode, I talked about how I think podcasts are real, they're like digital museums. It's like you can visit them, and it's a way to keep your legacies carrying on. It's a way to honor them, right? You don't have to physically go into a space to see legacy. You can create it right here and through your art, right? And so I just love that. And I'm just grateful to have been able to also honor your, you know, ancestors and your father and everyone you deeply care about. That's really special to me. And I love everything that you said. I have a couple more questions. One is, with, you know, all of your talents and your gifts and everything like that, you know how you hear sometimes, you know, what's a role model or who's someone that you looked up to growing up? I think that you would appreciate this instead, though, is that, you know, it really does take a village. And so I'm just curious to see or hear who was part of your village growing up and who inspired all the many different roles and hats that you wear today. You could talk about your village growing up or your village now, but I'm curious to see that because I don't think one person nurtures every single thing that we need, right? It takes a village and things sure. that, you know, nurtured our dreams. So Yeah. just curious.
Well, you know, I need no look no further than the room that I'm sitting in with the names that I've already mentioned in my right. intro. I can start with my grandmother, Queen Mother Frances Pierce. She was a hairdresser and an organizer. She was a public school teacher and a deeply spiritual woman mm-hmm. who used to rhyme all the time.
Look at that. Holly,
listen, how about that as an extension of my legacy? She would say, and you hear a lot of her on Black to the Future, which is really about Black women and the things that they taught me. There's a song in there called Attitude of Gratitude. Right. That was one of her things. You got to keep an attitude of gratitude. And, you know, that's not always the easiest thing for a 12-year-old to understand or appreciate, you know, because she tells you that right. when you're like, can I get some Fruity Pebbles? And she's like, no. And you're like, can I get anything good, sweet? She's like, no, well, here, have some Raisin Bran. Raisin Bran? You better keep an attitude of gratitude, you know. At least you got some cereal.
Love that.
And I'm sitting there, I'm sitting there hating on my Raisin Bran instead of being grateful. So, you know, at the time it was kind of like whatever, but you know, over time, especially after she passed, those seeds that she planted in my mind became the mantras that guide my daily practice. Like I'm grateful every day, and I think of her and thank her for that wisdom that she placed in the mind of a knuckleheaded little boy that and it took some time, again, going back to seeds, it took time for those seeds to germinate and, and to bear fruit. And, I've been thinking a lot about that. Another one she said was, no is a love word. You hear that? Listeners of the Grief Sense podcast, let me drop that gem on you one more again. I feel the spirit of Queen Mother Frances Pierce coming through me. She said, honey, no is a love word. Okay. Well, that is another one that took some time to really deeply internalize. No is a love word. First and foremost, it's a love word to yourself, right? You are extending love and courtesy and care to yourself by saying no when you need to. You are creating space for opportunities and abundance and energies that belong to you that would not be accessible to you unless you offer the loving no that is your birthright, you know? So
Period.
So that's who poured into me, Queen Mother. She had a lot of gems like that. And again, like I'm trying to picture myself at 7, 8 years old in Cambridge, Massachusetts, visiting her for the summer. I want something, she says no, and then when I gave her the stank face, she says, you know, no is a love word. I'm like, ugh. It's hard to be on the receiving end of that and truly appreciate it. But for us grown folks out there who knew a no was necessary and we didn't give it. And we sat in resentment or in misalignment because we didn't have the care and love to offer what was supposed to be offered with a spirit of joy and a spirit of grace. That means not only is the answer no, but you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yes. And
you're welcome. There's a mirror there, right? So you're welcome to yourself, right? But also to them, because they don't want you doing whatever they ask you to do half-hearted, or when that was meant belong to somebody else, or, you know, you're welcome for that no. And that's what a love word, it's not just a nice thing. It's a love word. It's a care. It's a courtesy for you to offer that. So anyway, that, and here's the love other thing about this that, tie it back to my dad. My brother and I go jogging every week. We run 5 miles and we talk. And he was telling me that, I hope he's okay with me sharing this. I'm sure he will be. It's not a super private thing. But he was telling me how our dad, when he was young, and my brother struggled with social anxiety, you know, just kind of an introverted guy, and being in groups kind of made him a little nervous. So my dad, when we were young, told him, you know, son, unclench your fist. You know, if your hand is unclenched, then you can be in a posture of receiving friendship, conversation, job opportunities, you know, partnership, video game buddies, anything, you know. But when you walk around with your hands clenched up like that, then nobody can
unclench my fist.
Listen, unclench your fist. So this was maybe, I don't know, 1989, 92, something. You know, my brother's, we had the same birthday. So he's turning 43 this year. I'm turning 40 in 2 weeks. So my dad gave my brother this advice. It was not until very recently that my brother truly began to understand and remember and put that advice into action. So what that indicated to me was something, going back to the metaphor of the seed planting, something really interesting. Like, you know, when my dad died in 2019, he could have said, shit, like, you know, I tried with my son, my eldest, he just didn't do it. I failed. You know what I mean? He could have felt a sense of regret, like maybe I should have tried harder, or, you know, in trying to convey this message. What I learned when my brother told me that, finally, you know, he's unclenching his fist and opening himself up to some new social abundance, which is flowing in uncontrollably at this point, is that my dad did his job completely. It was to plant the seed. You are not in control of when that seed cracks open, germinates, you know, spreads, grows, flowers, blooms, bears fruit. None of that is your responsibility. It's just to plant the seed. And that is enough, because my dad absolutely achieved his goal, and even though he never saw that that's what happened, you know, the soil wasn't ready to receive the seed. It was just crusty sitting on the top. Like, sometimes it takes a crack in the soil from, I don't know, maybe a trauma, maybe something you're grieving about, you know, that forces the ground open. So now it's in there. Now it may take 3-4 years to pop out. You know, it's like
powerful,
really powerful, really powerful. And just a reminder that, you know, if you have kind words or good advice or a channel to pass something on to someone, that it's not your responsibility necessarily to make sure that it clicks or to get it in there. Just pass the seed on and then let go, because it's not your responsibility to to do more than plant the seed. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so on that note, and kind of wrapping up here too, what advice would you give to young grievers who maybe also be musicians, artists, creatives? Like, what would your advice be to maybe someone experiencing grief for the first time and really doesn't know what to do with it, and they're really young, and maybe we can be part of their village in this moment? What would you pour into them at this moment?
Oof. I would say be present. That is my big advice. If you have big feelings, big feel them.
I love it.
Receive the information, the emotion, the moment, and what it has to offer you. Mm. There's this interesting anecdote I heard about buffaloes. Have you ever heard this, that they run when a storm's coming, what a buffalo does?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for those who may not know it, it's that buffaloes are unusual because, you know, when a storm is approaching a buffalo, they run towards the storm. And, you know, a lot of people were like, well, why is that? Buffaloes hate being wet, by the way. It's not like they're just waiting for a shower. They hate being wet. Yep. Why do they run towards the storm? Well, when you think about it, it makes complete sense. If the storm is coming this way and you're running this way, the quickest way through the storm is actually to run towards the storm. If you stay put, the storm will go over you at a slow pace. If you run away from it, actually the storm will be, it chases you and it goes over you the longest. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to mess yourself up, run away. Mm. You know, if you're fatigued, stay put, it'll be over. But if you want to get through it the quickest, you know, which is not always the goal, but run towards the storm.
Mm. I love that.
There's no avoiding getting wet. Run towards the storm, face it, sit with it, be present to it, you know, and then you're in the best position to choose what to do next. You could catch up with the storm and get some more wet if you want. You could sit and dry. You could walk towards the horizon and try to warm up. But there you have the most choices. If you're running away, you have the least amount of choices. So that would be my advice, would be if the grief is a storm. And to be clear, though the storm in this metaphor is usually seen as a bad thing, I don't see grief as a bad storm. Mm-mm. It's a storm in the way that a storm is a storm. It is a rain delivering mechanism.
Right.
Without storms, there wouldn't be fresh water. So thank God for the storm.
Rainbows.
There wouldn't be rainbows. There wouldn't be, you know, there wouldn't be plant life for us to eat if there weren't storms feeding the soil. So to be clear, though uncomfortable, storms are absolutely necessary. So first of all, thank God for the storm. Mm. But what do you want your relationship to it to be, especially if you don't like being wet? I would say run towards it, and that gives you the most options.
Beautiful. As you were saying that, please tell me why I was singing If I Ruled the World in my head, like walk right up to the sun, right? Like
walk
that just
right up
kind
to
of
the sun. I love it.
Hand in hand. Yeah. So that was like what was playing in my head when you were saying that. But well, Pierce, how can people get tapped in with you? How can they amplify your work? How can they connect with you? I really just want to amplify all of the amazing things that you are up to. So shout out all the things, shameless plug it all away. How can people get tapped in with you?
Great. Well, my name is Pierce Freelon, and that is where you can find all my things. That's my website. That is my handle on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, etc. So,
awesome.
You can find me and all my things just by searching my name.
Awesome. Well, y'all, please listen to all three albums. DAD, you said, right? There's Black to the Future and Ancestars. And y'all, I just really admire people who are doing different ways and, you know, really amplifying their creative expression, but also doing it in a way where it pours into the next generation. And I feel like, Pierce, you and your mom as well are just doing really beautiful work in community, in honor of our ancestors, in honor of legacy, in honor of being present, and really just tapping into this concept of letting creativity be your compass. Because I really truly believe that only beautiful things are going to continue to happen from that. The fruit, y'all going to be able to bear all the fruit you want for a very sustainable long time. And I'm really hoping and calling that. What I think is beautiful about this too is you're inspiring the next generation to do that as well. And not a lot of people are taking intentional thoughts or measures or efforts to really, you know, include the youth with their work. And I just really love how you're doing that. So please keep doing what you're doing. I'd love to continue amplifying your story. And thank you for being on Grief Sense today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. All right, listeners. Well, thank you for tuning in. Please give us a rating on wherever you consume your podcast. Like, subscribe, comment, all of the things. And thank you, Pierce, again. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Grief Sense Familia, that wraps up another episode of the Grief Sense Podcast. If this resonated with you, please feel free to share with someone who will appreciate it and tell a friend to tell a friend. Also, I'm a firm believer that feedback is a gift. So, you know, I'm just saying, I won't be mad if you decide to leave a review and a rating of your experience on the podcast so far. Also, let's help each other find community in grief, and let's amplify these stories far and wide. Thank you for tuning in. In solidarity y con mucho amor, Mimi.